Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Leo Laporte, episode 58 for February 28, 2009, ZFS. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free, libre, and open source software. All the cool kids are using it. Randall Schwartz is here. He's from Stonehenge.com. Perl programmer extraordinaire, a rock star in Perl, and soon to be a small talk rock star, a seaside king, the Neptune of seaside. Hello, Mr. Schwartz.
Hello, Leo. Good to talk to you again.
Speaking of seaside, you're not on a boat right now, are you?
No, but I will be real soon.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we've been taping ahead, so this is a first. You know, not only are we now officially weekly, we're not even going to miss a show while you're on the ocean.
That's right. That's right. You and I have put in a little extra effort to double up the shows that we're taping. So as we're taping this show, we're actually doing two shows today, although you'll actually hear them in the normal weekly sequence. So, yes, we won't have a gap this time, even though I will be out of commission for a couple of weeks.
We should mention, though, for those folks who like real-time content as opposed to store and forward content, that we do all of our shows now live on the TWiT network at live.twit.tv. And if you want to join us for Floss Weekly, every week except when Randall's on a boat. We can't haven't figured out how to do that live.
But it's 40 cents a minute, too. I'm not going to be satellite at 40 cents.
We ain't doing that. But every Wednesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern, normally we record Floss Weekly. That's 2 p.m. Pacific time. And you're welcome to join us live. We have two live chat rooms going, and I get a lot of feedback from the chat room. I try to incorporate questions from the chat room into our conversation since I don't know anything. I like to use that as a way to make myself sound smarter. Hasn't worked yet, folks. Who are we talking to this week?
We are talking to the people that can tell us about ZFS, the file system that Sun created it has compression built in. It has replication built in. It automatically allocates itself to storage sizes, so you don't have to have like one small drive, one large drive, and have to deal with changing the sizes on those. It's quite cool, and I understand it's going to be in Snow Leopard as well, which is the next release of the OS X operating system. And I understand it's also going to be, I think there's versions of it that run with Linux and BSD as well. I think we'll have to get in and ask them all the details about that. But we've got with us, in studio, in fact, coming in any moment now, Aaron Newcomb, who is, I believe, somebody involved in the sort of the community side of ZFS. And we also have David Brittle. He'll be phoning in soon. We'll get on him on the phone. He's one of the lead developers on ZFS.
So Aaron has texted us that he's going to be here in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, David is on the line. Let's get David in and start the conversation about ZFS. David works for Sun Microsystems. He's a software development manager. He's done NFS. He's also ZFS. Hi, David. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. There's been a lot of talk about ZFS in the Mac world lately, because I guess is Snow Leopard's going to support ZFS.
Correct.
He admitted it.
Oh. Yes. Listen, let me get my Apple disclaimer out first. Any and all comments made by myself and or represented by Sun Microsystems are purely conjecture based on information readily available via the web.
They don't know nothing, in other words.
That said, you know, I'll be glad to give their roadmap anytime.
Good. He's just making it up, folks, so don't believe him. So ZFS is obviously a file system.
Correct.
How is it different from existing file systems? What is a genesis? Why do we need another file system?
Let me take you back to sort of the dawn of ZFS. ZFS was created by Jeff Bonwick in concert with Bill Moore, Mark Mabee, Matt Ahrens, and a crew of others here at Sun. The problem was the difficulty in getting the current technology, predominantly UFS and SVM, to do things that they wanted. So they started with a whiteboard that said, what does the file system need to be so that it's user-friendly, it has guaranteed data integrity, ease of administration, and, oh, by the way, we expect blindingly fast performance.
All at once, huh?
And what time? What was the time frame for this?
ZFS, oh my goodness. I've been with the ZFS team for 5+ years. We shipped it, I think we released it into our release train vehicle in October of 05. I think it hit the streets mid 06. So we've got 3 years of release experience. Prior to that, we had almost 2 years of beta experience.
Was it open source from the beginning?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on how you look at open source. It wasn't developed per se in the open, but the code, once we put it into our release gate a month later, it hit the streets and available for developers and community alike to see what we were doing and have the opportunity to participate.
So how is ZFS different from other file systems then? I know it's going to implement some of those features that you said were desirable, but how does it do that?
For example, the data integrity, which you guys know is absolutely paramount today. There is no concept of, oh, let's just go to the tapes and reload what we did yesterday.
No.
That moment came and went. So data integrity and access has to be guaranteed. So ZFS, what it did was it implemented checksums. And that's sort of a simplification of what it is, because we've had checksums for quite some time. Additionally, the design team did was to move the checksum up into the metadata, thereby separating the data and the checksum. And this gives you other levels of protection for such things as indirect reads, indirect writes, phantom bus errors, DMA issues. So it adds another layer of protection that just plain checksums wouldn't give you.
But it's to support journaling particularly, or is it journaling plus?
Well, ZFS does have journaling features, but the data integrity is sort of a business imperative.
So it's beyond. Okay, so forgive my ignorance here. Journaling helps with data integrity, does it not?
Journaling, and the way I look at journaling, is that it gives you the ability to process IOs not only quicker, but with more integrity.
Okay.
So,
but it doesn't go the full distance in terms of integrity that you wanted it to go, that you needed it
no,
to
go. No, because here, let me draw you a scenario with a failure and then talk about how ZFS
perfect
with it.
Okay.
So take, for example, you're an application, you hand me a chunk of data, and I diligently go out and write it to the best of my ability. Sometime later, you say, please give me that data back. And this is sort of the basis of what file systems truly are all about.
Right.
That guarantee that if I give you something, you guarantee to give it back to me exactly as I gave it to you.
Right.
Along that journey, instead of writing to block A, I wrote to block B. Oops, here in my case, I'll blame the hardware, the disk drive, the bus, the PCI controller. I'll blame something else, but somebody made a mistake en route. So then you turn around sometime later and ask me to give that back to you. I go off and read block A. Block A, as far as the hardware can tell, looks good.
Right.
So I give that back to you, the application. Here, instead of your bank account having, you know, your normal paycheck, you end up with a minus number. Right. And this also goes to one of my points, is that there's no such thing as silent data corruption. Sooner or later, the corruption rears its head. Mm-hmm. Now, it might be in a JPEG file where you just notice, geez, this picture,
right.
You know.
There's a dot somewhere.
There's a dot there. Right. Or, you know, geez, I don't remember Sally having a beard. something has happened. You may just pass right over and not care.
Right.
Because that piece of data to you wasn't interesting. But let it happen in a financial or a medical industry.
Or a binary file where one bit missing can corrupt the whole thing.
Yeah, and instead of having security on your server, you now have a open door, right? So anyway, so ZFS, what we would do then is, because we take that piece of data that you gave us, we generate ECC on it. And also, ZFS is a transactional model, meaning that we write everything or we write nothing.
Hmm.
So we build up this transaction and includes not only this piece of data that you've handed us, but also the metadata with the ECC connected to it. So we write that to disk. And we know that we've done the absolute best job we can, same as the previous file system. Yet now, let's say that someplace in this hardware, instead of writing to block A, we wrote to block B. So anyway, sometime later, you know, all of a sudden you say, give me that piece of data back. We go off diligently and we find it, and we go to block A, because this time all the hardware, all the software behaved correctly. We bring up block A, we bring up the metadata, and we go, wait a minute, this is not correct. All of a sudden, we're stuck in a position where we're not going to give you the data because it's wrong. Period. End of subject. Now, the good news is you were rather clever and you said, this data is truly very important to me. I will have a mirror, or I'll have a RAID Z configuration. ZFS will see, and I'll take the easy case. ZFS will see the mirror and go, wait a minute, this one's bad. Let me go try the other mirror. And sure enough, I read block A, the checksum is correct. I go, oh, this is great here. Let me give you the data. And oh, by the way, I know the other side of this mirror is bad. Let me go fix that without you knowing about it. So the next time you ask me for this data, right there it is.
That's pretty incredible. And that's all just built in. It's transparent to me. I just use the file system and it gives me all those features then.
Absolutely. Another example, there was a study done within the recent past, meaning probably within the last year, by CERT in Switzerland, which is the particle physics guys. They took 3,000 servers, ran a week's worth of testing. These are all servers with hardware RAID protection, RAID being that we can fail any one drive out of five and will survive the operation. And they detected, and I may get the number wrong, they detected 158 silent data corruptions. Again, it was silent. They detected it. So the hardware RAID provides, as they described it, noisy data corruption protection. Whereas at ZFS, we would not have had those 158 data corruptions because it's all the way up the software stack. It's the hardware components. It's the hardware drivers. It's the software in your disk drive. It's the software or firmware in your controllers. We go from end-to-end data integrity. And again,
the hard drives have ECC. And as you said, the RAID has ECC, but you're in addition to the ECC in the hardware.
Correct. We write it on disk. We know it's there.
Right.
Right. And we get to check it back right before we hand the data back to you.
So Aaron has come in. Let me pause for a moment. And Aaron Newcomb has joined us.
You may say hello, Aaron.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
So, Aaron, what's your relationship to David?
Right. So, David is more, he's in charge of the engineers that are actually working on the product, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I do is I take the output of that, what David brings to the table, so to speak, and I work on putting that in forms that can be a little bit more easily consumed.
You're kind of packaging it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. So we've been talking up to now about how ZFS differs from other file systems. But I would guess, David, that this kind of data integrity you're talking about is a goal of all modern file systems.
Absolutely. And when we were working on ZFS before we released it, one of the problems that we were facing is, how do we sell you something that you think you already have? Right? You got this laptop, or you got a server box at home, or you're plugged into the corporate enterprise level stuff, and you've always thought, geez, I've got data integrity. Why would I care about that? Well, the truth is you didn't have it, right? We were in a beta test environment, and we gave out the software, and we told somebody, hey, plug it in, you know, beat it up as hard as you can. And he comes back and he keeps going, man, I'm getting these checksum errors on this drive. What is going on? Your software is no good. But we rolled our sleeves up, went into his office, and sure enough, his disk drive was flaky and had been for probably years. And he was unaware of it because of the existing technology he was running.
So ZFS will say, hey, there's a problem here.
You betcha. We've had cases where we put it on large hardware RAID protected enterprise storage solutions, and all of a sudden they go, hey, we're getting checksum errors here. What's going on? And by the time you do the sort of root cause analysis, you get down to some hardware component was failing that without CFS you would not have known about.
In fact, I've even heard stories about people actually finding problems with memory. Because
really?
Yeah, because the ZFS rides on top of all that. And so there's been folks that have been able to trace back and say, not even a disk level or like a controller
there's
level.
There's corruption
like
occurring, but it's occurring in RAM.
It's occurring in RAM.
Wow.
And so you can actually even detect that. It's kind of an added side, a nice little bonus side effect that you get from running it at that level.
Wow.
Seems so,
what kind of overhead does that incur then? It sounds like you've got a lot of extra checksums and things floating around. Is that going to be significant?
No, and your question's really sort of twofold. One is, can the hardware handle it? The hardware, the CPUs, the memory is all just continue to evolve at rapid pace. So we're getting the benefit of these breathtakingly fast and functional CPU and memory modules. So, and then we've done recent analysis on...
I knew that was going to do that. I was waiting for it.
Don't worry, he's got a Google phone. It's just they're very noisy. They talk a lot. Is that a G1 in there?
No, that's my laptop.
Oh, it's your laptop doing
that. Yeah.
Oh,
all
right. Oh, so his laptop's chatty. Anyway, and so the other thing is we did a study recently on one of our in-house mail and file servers, and the metadata takes up 2 to 3% of the disk. So you're not paying a large penalty in loss of capacity. You're not paying that. Here, nothing's for free, so checksum does cost you something, but imagine one trip to the tape drive.
Yeah.
What's that cost you? Or, for example, your server going offline, huge expense.
Right. And the other thing to point out here, too, in terms of, resource consumption, I mean, the trend has really been, if you talk about Moore's Law and the doubling of everything, right, that happens. So that trend has held true for processors and memory. It has not held true for disk. So disk has not followed that law.
Disk storage.
Disk speed. Speeds and feeds.
Right.
And performance.
Storage certainly has.
Storage, but in order to get that storage, you have to have a lot of disks.
Right.
But what you see is a much more, on the server level, you see CPUs and memory following that speed jump, every few years. Maybe 10 years ago, this wouldn't have been possible, right? Because the CPU and memory just wasn't there. But... Right. With current CPU and memory, even on what you get at home these days, certainly the impact is minimal.
Well, that's an interesting point. This is primarily for enterprise, but it does seem like it's starting to migrate down now into Unix and an OS X and so forth.
Absolutely.
So we will start seeing this in home computers.
I believe so. I mean, maybe David has his thoughts on that. I think it'll start with start at the server level. Certainly, that's where it's starting in all of our products. And you also see it rolled out in BSD and then... that kind of trickles up to like Apple and right. those kind of folks right. that are looking to implement this. So I think you'll see it. But even Apple, I think, is starting out on their server line with their implementation. Yeah. And then, the thought is, of course, you never know with Apple, but the thought is that it'll eventually trickle down into the desktop OS.
Can you compare it to, say, NTFS? No, you don't want to.
No.
You should see the face, folks.
You can, but it'll be a bad face.
It was an expressive face. That was sufficient, actually. I mean,
I think David could give you some comparison, but I mean, really with the feature set, it's completely different.
It's not the same.
And folks, I do run CFS on my laptop.
Really?
CFS actually understands the unique characteristics of a single drive, right? We do some very... aggressive things to make a single drive even behave with regards to resiliency better than maybe it would with other file systems. Case in point, a file system structure looks a lot like a tree system. You have one node pointing to two nodes and all that. We have something called Ditto blocks where we take this tree structure and make replications of it so that even if you lose a metadata node, you still have access to the data below it. And on a single drive, we recognize, geez, we're on a single drive. Let's move this tree structure around to different zones on a single drive.
That would be maybe good for the kind of leveling that's happening in SSDs, that kind of thing?
No, this one actually
it's
works.
Higher level than that.
Yeah, it gives you the level of redundancy that we expect in CFS.
Right. You don't do anything particular for SSDs.
Oh, no, we absolutely
do. Yeah, we do.
That's a wonderful segue. ZFS works on a concept of pooled storage. Basically, we want you to give us all your drives, and we will pool them up as a single resource.
Oh, interesting.
and give that image to you. So basically, if you're on a system, you don't see spindle A, B, C, you don't see anything like that. You see one image of your storage. So CFS takes it up, collects it up, uses it all, presents it to you. It allows for optimizing for I/O performance, capacity performance, right? And you take a pool of, let's say, 100 disk drives. You need more storage. You just add another 20, 50 storage drives to it. Instantly, CFS instantly sees that, starts using it, starts moving the data, taking care of not only the throughput capacity, but also the size capacity.
That is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So ZFS, again, works on a pooled storage, but with the SSD devices, we have a hybrid pool. What is a hybrid pool? Hybrid pool is a marriage of traditional disk drives with SSDs. The SSDs, we are targeting to use them on IOs that have performance characteristics such that we have to land the IO right now. And we can't wait for anything that's queued up on the disk drive. So we fire off these very important IOs to the SSDs. Over time, we slowly drain it out into the regular hard drive. And we also have a part of what makes ZFS just really rock performance-wise is a thing called an ARC. It's an adaptive replacement cache. It's a very highly efficient mechanism for keeping the right data in memory. We're taking that concept and doing something called L2 ARC, where we'll take this same very efficient caching mechanism and then push it out to the SSDs, thereby growing this sort of very highly efficient memory manager that keeps the right data in memory when you need it.
And so that's in RAM? That cache is stored in RAM?
The first level is stored in the system's RAM. The second level, they have something called L2 ARC. You can do a search on that. You'll find a nice write-up about it. We'll push off to the SSDs.
Because they have their own cache.
Well, they are a flash-based technology.
Right, and there's
high performance. Sorry, Aaron.
I was just going to say, and it's important to note that there's different kinds of these SSDs, right?
So you have an Intel, is that an X25 there?
I believe it's the X25E.
The Enterprise. That's
right.
Much faster.
And so that's a good distinction, first of all. When a lot of people are hearing this, if they're not familiar with storage technologies, they're probably thinking, oh, is this the same disk that I put in my laptop or, that I get from Apple or whatever?
Unless you have thousands of dollars to burn.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, these are the Enterprise edition of these. So they're much more resilient, right? And they have special features built in that to protect the data and make sure that the wear leveling is correct, right? Because this is flash technology.
Right.
We don't want them to go bad if you're doing lots of small IOs. So there's technology built into these drives that are not similar to the consumer market. But also beyond that, there's different types of SSDs. So there's SSDs that are built for read, targeting read load, and there's SSDs that target write load.
Right.
And so the beauty of that is that with ZFS, ZFS understands those devices. And so it can make use of both for different workloads.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have L2 ARC built into the drive?
No, there's some cache in the drive.
So the L2 ARC will use that cache.
Yeah, L2 ARC is a ZFS technology, right? So it lives in the software stack, but it'll understand these hybrid pools being a collection of these things we refer to as ReadZillas or log devices.
Mm-hmm.
It does high performance reading. But also the WriteZillas or Write SSDs, we went to the Intel folks and said, look, we need high performance writes that we may never read. And that's a bit tongue in cheek because we will read them, but we will write high performance ops to these devices and then slowly bleed them off to the hard drives.
Right.
Right.
But we've and that's handled on these drives in the controller technology.
Maybe David can speak to that, but I think the answer is no, right? So it's all a software level.
It's all software level.
So there's no intermediate, there doesn't have to be an intermediate hardware level in order to make this happen.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you can make this happen,
on anything
at home with, if you have enough SATA controllers, hook up 5 or 6 SATA drives and it'll all work. The performance, obviously there's going to be a little bit of a performance delta, but all the features that we're talking about being able to grow the pool and all that stuff will work for you.
Is it comparable to RAID in effect?
So ZFS, and I don't know how far you've gotten into this. Maybe I missed that first
portion. Repeat it anyway, because I didn't understand a word.
So ZFS really provides, that's why I'm here, right? I'm like, take it to that higher level.
Yeah. You're here for the numbskull.
So ZFS provides two things, right? It provides that traditional RAID element that you would normally get, from a RAID controller, or maybe you're doing it through LVM. If you're a Unix person, you're used to dealing with LVM. It provides that, but it also provides the file system and the volume management functions. It provides all of that in one tool.
Wow.
So it's not that you can't use other hardware features to speed things up, in between your disks and your server, just like we're using these SSDs, right? To speed up reads and writes where needed. But really it in a lot of cases it obsoletes that requirement for the RAID controller to sit in between the server and the storage.
Right. So you've got speed, you've got data integrity. What were some of the other things, Bill, that the design goals?
Ease of use is one.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then now ease of use for a programmer. I mean, for the API.
Aaron, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say yes and no, right? So maybe this is a good time to show you. I've got my laptop running here with OpenSolaris running on it, and we can.
It's
talk
a Mac
about
laptop
that.
Running OpenSolaris.
It's actually a Mac laptop running Ubuntu Linux running OpenSolaris in VM. Yeah. Sorry,
Steve.
Yeah.
Okay. So Solaris is running in a virtual machine there.
Right. So I could go to the command line, right, and configure ZFS that way, mm-hmm. right? But I don't have to do it that way.
There's a GUI?
Well, actually, there's a GUI coming, but we've built ZFS into some of the functionality in OpenSolaris. So there's a tool called Time Slider.
Wow.
So I don't know if you've heard about Time Slider, mm-hmm. but if I go to my home folder, and I'm just opening for those up that can't
Most
watch this.
Most people are listening.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So if I go to my home folder, you can see I've got some things in my home folder, mm-hmm. A picture of you, Leo, and
I noticed that, yeah.
and a nice little...
How long have you felt that way about it?
Yeah. So this is example only. Don't make any inferences, please. So I've got a file here called I Love Leo and a nice little picture of Leo. Nice little picture of Leo. And you can see there's a little button here that looks like a clock, right? So if I click on the button... you see there's this little slider that comes up. And if I actually move this, what's happening in the background here is ZFS. I've told ZFS to take snapshots. And this is an optional feature in OpenSolaris. You can turn it on, turn it off. So I've told ZFS to take some snapshots, and it takes them about every 10 minutes. And because of the way ZFS works, it doesn't use up a lot of extra disk on the hard drive, right?
Snapshots of the state of the hard drive?
Right, exactly.
Wow.
And you can customize this per file system. So
similar to Time Machine on the Mac then, right?
Well, sort of, yeah. So what I can do is I can just click the slider, and if I click it back, I can go back in time.
It's very similar in that sense. Yeah.
Right, that sense is similar. The technology is a little bit different. But if I go back in time...
this is what your drive looked like 6 days ago.
Right. And it's hard to see this at an angle. Oh, there. Wow. Oh, you can see some changes.
That's when you, what did you, yeah, it took my picture off.
Well, it actually replaced it. So here's
me with a hot dog.
Yes. Right. So it's a,
what have you been, you've been Googling me. I see.
Yeah. I went out and got some sample pictures off Google.
That's not the best picture ever.
So you've seen that picture before, I assume.
I think, yes.
Yeah.
So now there's a different view.
So this is great. Not only for developers, but it's also great for just people that, you know, want to keep consistent things on their hard drive.
And we should mention there was no star field. It was instantaneous. You just slide it back and there you are several hours earlier.
Right. Exactly.
And it keeps continual snapshots every 10 minutes up to a certain amount of space.
Yeah. So there's a limiter in the GUI that when you set this up and it says, you know, do this until the hard drive's 80% full or 50% full.
But it's not making copies of files.
Right. So that's another.
Is it vectors?
It's deltas.
Deltas.
Yeah, that's a good. So it's like it's taking just the differences. It's not taking whole snapshots of the whole drive. Right. Because that would fill up the drive very quickly. So all it's doing is it's taking the deltas. So whatever's changed. It writes that to the snapshot.
It's very efficient, that
It's
way.
Very, very efficient. I think it tells me here how much.
That's actually a good angle. You can leave it like that. That's
okay.
A great angle.
All right, great. So it actually tells me here how much I've used. Look, I've taken 32 snapshots, and I'm only using 1.5 meg of space. So, you know, on a 160 gig hard drive or a 250 gig hard drive, it's going to take a long time to, unless you're doing like, you know, maybe video editing and you're snapshotting all that, that probably wouldn't be a very good use of space.
Is it snapshotting the entire file or just the blocks that have changed?
Right. So in this case, it's snapshotting the entire file system because that's the easy, I just clicked that as an option. But right. If I wanted to, I could set up a separate file system using ZFS, and then I could just take snapshots of that file system. So for a developer, if they're keeping all of their work around.
It's almost a Git.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you could use it in conjunction with that, right? Because, yeah. Oh, crap, I just overwrote some file I didn't want to, and I hadn't uploaded it to the repository yet.
Right.
Well, guess what? You slide this back
a
couple minutes.
Local repository in effect.
In effect, yeah.
Yep. Wow. I want cool. this now. I want
Me
this.
Too. That's very cool.
Yep.
And let me take you through another use case, which we really find exciting, and that is you've got a new piece of software in your hand. You want to try it out, but you've got a system that's running just super, so you're a little bit cautious. So what you do is you go into the root file system, take a snapshot, do the update. If you like it, great. If you don't, you fall back to the snapshot.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's really neat.
Yeah.
That's very system powerful. Recovery at a much lower, more effective level, really.
Right. Yep. So if you think about the way you do updates today with Windows, for example, right? So Windows starts running slow.
Yeah.
And every 6 months or so, it used to be with XP, not so much now, but you know, you'd basically wipe out your hard drive and
I
start
still
over.
Do, yeah.
And so if this functionality was available, you could still wipe out your hard drive. But if you take a snapshot first and something goes wrong, you can always just go back and get back to where you were.
Now, Microsoft's, part of Longhorn was this databasing file system, features like that. You've chosen not to do something like that.
Right. Right.
Why not?
I don't know. Maybe David can answer that one.
Well, Microsoft wasn't able to make it work, so that might be one... Right. Indicator might have been a bad idea. I don't know.
Yeah, we took those four sort of top order marching bits to go forward.
Right.
And one thing I'd like to point out that ZFS is not just UFS and SVM with new cool stuff. It really is a brand new code base starting over based on new realities, right? The hardware realities, the necessity of being able to access your data 100% of the time, things of that nature.
I mean, this is pretty impressive, I have to say. But you make an important point, Aaron, that you couldn't really do this on older hardware. This is a modern file system that required modern hardware.
Right? Yeah, for enterprise use. I mean, obviously, this is running on my laptop.
Running on a Mac,
right?
Yeah.
So this isn't this is, but it is modern hardware, right?
It's a lot more speedy than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah. So you're going to want a system, you know, maybe with a gig of RAM and things like that to make use of some of these features, not all of them. You could scale down. And we'll get into this a little bit later on, but in terms of OpenSolaris, certainly you could scale down the code base there and put it on an older piece of hardware.
What's the license right now for ZFS?
So I'll let you read it, actually. It's on the back of the disk here. I've got a disk for you.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Sorry, Randall.
So that's a live CD.
This is a live CD of OpenSolaris, which is really cool.
Right. And so that's available under parts of the code are GPL. As many as we can make them. Parts of the code are CDDL, which is our license.
Uh-huh.
And then parts of the code are restricted. So like, for example, NVIDIA drivers and things like that, just like you'd have
those
in
are commercials.
A Linux. Those are commercials, but we do have rights to distribute those. So where some of the Linux distributions don't have those rights, we've worked with companies to get those rights to actually distribute those files with the, for example, with the live CD that I just handed you.
You know, actually, it's a pretty short a license agreement. Half of it's in French. So at first when I thought, well, you know, there's some code. But no, it's two paragraphs. It's very brief.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And mostly it says it's CDDL.
Right.
But there is an OpenSolaris binary license. And the file system itself, is it CDDL?
The what?
The file system itself.
Yes. Okay. So ZFS is CDDL.
Okay.
Yep.
Does that make it compatible with most open source
So it makes it compatible with licenses like the BSD license.
Mm-hmm.
It is not compatible with GPL right now.
Okay, so you couldn't distribute a Linux with ZFS as one of the file systems.
Right. That's right, with a full-blown Linux. Now, I know there are some work being done with the kernel team, the Linux kernel team, to take the parts that they can get under GPL and use those. So I believe ZFS readability will be available shortly. If it's not out there today, it'll be within the next week or two. You'll be able to download the latest Linux kernel, and it'll have ZFS read only available. So you can at least read ZFS file systems.
That's important if for compatibility. I mean,
yeah, I mean, and the cool thing about that is for me, right, because I'm an open source guy. So the cool thing for me is, look, at least we were able to take the parts that we could get, right? Because there's agreements with other companies, right, and things. So right, we couldn't do the whole thing, but at least we can take the parts that we have and that we can use, and at least give a readability for Linux, you know. Right. And if the agreements work out, if things work out, maybe down the road we can do more. But that's what we can do today.
Can you download this?
Absolutely.
You've given me a disk of Open Solaris, but yeah, you could download this open
Absolutely.
As a live CD.
Yeah, it comes in ISO form, so you can go to opensolaris.org, and you can download that and burn it or just run it in a VirtualBox session like I'm doing, and you can test all this stuff out for yourself. And Open Solaris is kind of on the track of being taking Solaris and making it a lot more user friendly, especially for people that are used to Linux. So there's a lot of Linux user land tools that are, especially in this latest version that came out in November, for folks that want to try it out. There's still a few things that aren't there. For example, top, is not there. Sometimes that throws people for a loop, right?
I type TOP and nothing happens. I don't know what to do.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So there's a little bit of a learning curve there, right. but you'll learn. Yeah. Yeah. It's not that difficult, no, really. There's a lot of, documentation, tutorials and guides and forums where people can go and get help if they want it.
And you'll be glad to know, Randall, it comes in Portuguese.
Ooh, cool.
We've actually done a lot of work.
There's
on
a lot of languages. On this
yeah,
disc.
We've done a lot of work on languages. I mean, we want people to be able to use it. And so we've taken, that's one of the big areas where people have contributed.
That's great.
Contributed the different language compatibility.
This single disc has English, German, Spanish, French, Italian, Swedish, Portuguese, Russian, Chinese, Korean, it looks like, Japanese. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Swedish chef.
Yeah. No. It does. It has lolcat though. That's kind of an interesting choice. I don't,
Klingon.
I can has Solaris. So I'm sorry. You have to forgive me. I've lost my head here. This is pretty exciting. Now, Apple's going to distribute it with OS 10. It will be really for server.
That's what I've heard, is that it'll only be available on
Too
the
bad,
server version.
Because I think that, HFS Plus is like NTFS. It's aging.
Right.
In fact, it's older than NTFS.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It wouldn't be a bad thing, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Do you think the desktops might move to ZFS in time?
Well, I think the Linux desktop, or I mean, the Apple desktop will. I mean, I don't see why they wouldn't.
Yeah.
Especially since it's base, they I don't want to say steal. I can't say steal. They use a lot of the BSD code base, right?
They borrow it.
Right. Right. They borrow it and they contribute some.
A little bit. a little teeny.
I think it's a good possibility, but with like everything else, I mean, they're taking the code and using it and kind of doing their own thing with it. So we'll see what they do. Hopefully soon, that'll be the default file system.
And let's hope they don't fork it.
Right. Right.
Which would be a big mistake, Apple.
Well, it would be only because then it would be more
confuses
difficult.
Confuses the world. I'm sorry.
It really does. And it would be more difficult as we roll things out into ZFS for them to take advantage of that.
Is the biggest downside efficiency? Speed?
For ZFS
yeah.
or?
I mean, why wouldn't you want to use it? No reason.
No.
He can't think of a single reason why you wouldn't want to use ZFS.
I can't. I don't know. Is Dave still on or is
yeah.
he?
Yeah, no, I'm still
He's about
here.
To leave. We'll give you your last 3 minutes, Dave.
Yeah, let me do a plug for the future for ZFS.
That's what I want to hear. Yeah.
The plug for the future is we have within our sites, meaning sometime this year, you'll have dedupe capability, and I'll allow Aaron to go sort of into depth about that.
Okay.
We're also going to have on-disk encryption in the near future.
Wow.
That's an interesting problem because every once in a while, your corporate disk walks out the door by itself.
Right.
We're going to have user quotas also at the user level, which is real attractive to the education community. So lots of cool things coming down the pike. If you're not playing or using ZFS today, I invite you to do that. Anyway, thank you very much for the opportunity to come and chat with you. If you guys want to get a hold of me later part of this year, I'll give you an update on all the cool stuff we've gotten done this year.
Cool.
Dave Brittle,
cool.
Thank you so much for joining us from Sun Microsystems, and thanks for your work on ZFS. This looks like a very, very cool file system.
Thank you much. Bye
Take
now.
Take care, David. Bye-bye. So, Randall, you wanted me? Let me call you back. You can send us video.
Oh, it's okay. I don't even need to see me now.
He doesn't want anybody to see him.
You can see me. You can see me on the second show.
I'll see you later. We'll see you later. Yeah. So, all right. What is it? Dedukes? What did he say? What is that?
Deduplication.
Oh, eliminating duplication.
Exactly. Right.
Automatically?
Yes. Well, it may be an option, right? You can turn it on or turn it off.
Wow.
So
that's a very high level function to put in a file system.
Right. So people that don't know what deduplication is, it may be good to explain real quick. It's really taking, so you got files that are being written, and a lot of times, especially in a file sharing environment where, you know, you're passing around, let's say a Windows doc or something like that, some sort of document, people are editing it, changing it, you know, before the final version, and everybody saves this, right? So everybody saves their own version of this file. And so the file may be 99% the same, but you store a whole separate version of the file. So that takes up a lot of space. So what dedupe does is it recognizes that and it says, hey, these blocks in this file that you're sending me, these blocks are the same and only this one is different. And so it's similar to snapshot technology
deltas.
Right. It's just the deltas. So you save a file, it recognizes that it's nearly the same as another file and it only stores the difference.
Much like rsync, for instance, would do when you're copying.
Right. And this would be similar to how Git is storing its objects then too, because there's a lot of the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, and will it be whole disk encryption, file level encryption? What kind of encryption?
I believe it's, I don't know the answer to that. Okay. That would be a Dave question. Yeah. He's gone.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's going to be, I don't know if that's been worked out yet. But you know what, you know, for those that are interested in encryption, you know, remember all of this is being developed in the open and that's the beauty of it, right? So you can go to opensolaris.org, go to the ZFS community, and there is an encryption project. In fact, if you do a Google search for ZFS encryption, it'll point right to that page. And then you can take a look for yourself and see what work is being done. But I know that's something that's been, you know, obviously, especially for like government customers and things. I mean, that's something that's very, very high on their priority list. So we're definitely working hard on that.
It's at opensolaris.org. There's a whole whole page dedicated to it.
Yeah. One of the things that interests me about ZFS is the compression as well. You have a lot of big, fat text files, and you don't care how fast you get them off the disk.
Right.
Like for long-term archival storage, it seems like having a compressing file system is pretty convenient. Like for my laptop, I might have a whole section that would be compressed to get more data on there.
Yeah, exactly. So we support several different versions of compression. So depending on which one, what you're doing, you may find one works better for you than another. In fact, that point was, I was talking with Smug Mug, right?
Yeah.
So Dom Caskell from Smug Mug, gave a talk.
Are they going to use ZFS?
They're using it today. Yeah. They're using it. They're having very good luck with it actually. And maybe this is kind of a segue into where
I thought I read that,
where we're going with this. Yeah. So they use it on an appliance level. So Sun has recently introduced some appliances that use ZFS. And so by an appliance, it's very easy to manage. There's an incredible GUI around that.
Kind of like a NAS.
It's a NAS box, exactly. Yeah. But it has ZFS is really running the box, right? So ZFS and another would be another good topic for at least part of a show, which is DTrace, which is a debugging tool that Solaris has developed, which gives you incredible views into the software and hardware as well. So they've taken really ZFS and DTrace and made this and took all the complexity out of it. So when you want to set up a new file system, for example, you know, you click add file system, type in the name of the file system, hit OK. You may have to adjust, you know, do I want to use NFS or do I want to use SIFS or do I want to use maybe FTP? So there are some things that you need to configure that way. But to do it on the command line versus doing it in the GUI is incredibly different. So that's kind of the appliance approach, and we have those available today, and they're very exciting. And that's what SmugMug is using.
They're using them as their storage system, or
so what they're doing. I believe this is all public information. So what they're doing is they're using it for to store all of their metadata and some of their database stuff that they do.
Interesting.
Mm. So they use Amazon to actually store.
Yeah, it's all S3. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right. They use that. I mean, they're looking at it, right? So they're considering
moving it off S3. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to speak for them.
Like the idea of but almost you're backing up the metadata onto these appliances,
right?
This is the key stuff,
so, right? Right. Yeah. So this is the stuff that you don't want to lose, right? Because hopefully Amazon's protecting all that other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Right. So this is the stuff that you really don't want to lose, and so that's what they're using it for, and they're seeing some great performance results. In fact, if you go out to his blog, Don McCaskill's blog, you can see his take on ZFS and on the appliances that we've developed.
Very interesting.
And see if it makes sense. So
would ZFS work over S3? Could you, is it efficiently load and save data?
That would be
your interface to
tough.
S3, I think, is WebDAV.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So
but I mean, could you have an S3 backend that's efficient? Then you're not paying extra cost for rewriting blocks and stuff.
Right, right. I mean, I know that there are other ways to do that. I don't think, as far as I know, ZFS doesn't like write to it directly, but I don't know. That's an interesting idea.
I'm intrigued now by Open Solaris. Well, I'm just wondering, is Sun interested in kind of making this a competitor to Linux and BSD?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't categorize it that way. I wouldn't say necessarily a competitor, but I mean, what it really does is it opens the doors for somebody that's interested in Solaris, since it's all open source.
Certainly a great ad for Solaris.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, because you can pick that up. Anybody can run it. It's a live CD. You can install it or not install it and try out everything that's in Solaris, right? And more, because all of our development really is going on in open Solaris.
Right.
So it's like being able to try out the latest and greatest, just like with Fedora or OpenSUSE. You know, you can try things out kind of upstream, so to speak, before they make it back down into the core.
Is ZFS the operating system for all Solaris installations now?
Not all Solaris installations, but it is for all open Solaris installations. Yeah.
It's the default.
Yeah. You can still choose, right? I mean, it's Unix. You can go in and change things if you want to.
Well, there's only one missing feature. It doesn't murder its wife. But other than that, I'm sorry. I am so sorry I said that. Anyway,
yeah, but that's really I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you know, we mentioned like L2 Arc, right?
Yes.
And so I had similar questions with L2 Arc, as far as how it works. And this is a great example of how open source really is a great alternative, is that I had a question, needed some information. And so one of the guys just sends me this link in email and he says, "May the source be with you." So I was like, okay, I'll go for this. Okay. So I clicked on it, and sure enough, it was a link to arc.c, right? We mentioned Arc and L2 Arc.
Right.
It was a link to arc.c.
That's
and
great.
And within the source code, the documentation was so good.
Wow.
That I was able to get everything I needed right out of the source code.
That's very cool.
It's very cool. Yeah. It's cool in two ways, right? It's cool.
Now, is that in-house development or is that part of the open source project?
Well, it's all open.
Yeah.
Most
is it
of the
Sun programmers.
It's mostly Sun programmers right now. You know, probably 90% is Sun. But I mean, we're certainly open to anybody if they have a contribution they want to make. Right. You know, submit it. Get involved in the community. It's great.
Randall, you got any other questions for Aaron?
I'm just having a fun time listening. Hey, a couple people in the chat room have talked about Drobo as we're going through this conversation. How would you compare, if you know, what Drobo is doing with what said that appliance was that you talked about a few minutes ago?
Right. So, well, obviously there's scale, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously Drobo is what, like four drives or something like that?
Yeah, it's four. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I looked up Drobo a while back and I actually ended up making my own at home.
Well, any NAS does something similar. I mean,
yeah, it's
not quite
similar.
RAID 5. They're Drobo's proprietary
taken,
RAID 5.
The similarity really is that Drobo has tried to take away the complexity,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
So you pop out a drive, you pop in a new one.
Right.
I mean, they're using standard RAID to accomplish that. So they've got
RAID. There's some differences because the minimum, you know, like with RAID 5, you're stuck with the smallest drive becomes the standard for all four drives.
Right. And
they don't do that.
Okay. So last time I looked up, they were doing that. So like if you put in.
No,
like,
if you put four heterogeneous drives, it's a sum of all four drives.
Okay. Okay.
So I think these are minor differences.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
probably very similar.
Yeah. It is very similar. But like I said before, I mean, anybody that wants to make this at home with ZFS could always do it just by taking those drives and hooking up to your SATA interfaces and.
Yeah,
and you know, setting up
as
ZFS
robust as say a RAID 5 as
more robust.
More
we mentioned
robust,
the checksumming, right?
Right,
and a lot of that the higher level checksumming, which you can't do on the RAID devices.
Besides your appliances, the Sun appliances, are mm-hmm. other NAS manufacturers looking at ZFS as a
yeah? So there's a lot of interest actually.
Seems like it'd be an improvement over your traditional Linux NAS.
Right, right. So there's a lot of interest from companies that we're getting saying, hey, you know. We really like this. And the good news about Open Solaris is the code's out there. So, they can take the code and play with it all they want and come up with something very similar. I mean, there's a lot of Linux alternatives too, right? There's OpenFiler, for example, mm-hmm. you know, you could take and download that. And there's a BSD version as well that you could use. So the difference really between those versions and what Sun is doing or what you could build on top of ZFS is, you get all that great, those added features that we're building into ZFS that you don't have. It's a lot more difficult to set up on the command line. I know that, you know, it's basically one command for ZFS to create a file system, mount the file system, and share the file system out over like NFS. One command. It's about this long.
Do you use kind of an init tab style? I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, my experience with file systems on Linux. You're not using something like an init tab to do that?
No.
It's there's some program that's running that just does the whole, whole setup.
Yeah. Well, it's in the kernel.
It's in the kernel.
It's built in the kernel.
Mm-hmm. And how does this compare with LVM?
So LVM is a volume manager, right? And so there's a lot of steps even before you get to that level that you have to do. For example, you know, in the in Unix world, you have to find the, you have to get the device into the kernel and then do your LVM. You have to run some LVM commands. You have to worry about whether you're going to do RAID protection or not. And then by the time you're done with all that, you still don't have a file system yet. Right. So you just have a block device that now you can go create a file system on. So you go create your file system, then you have to format the file system and then you share the file system out over NFS.
Right.
So, you know, it maybe half hour worth of work for a single file system for a Unix administrator, or if they're good, they've scripted it and it just runs in the background. But for this, like I said, it's one command and you're done.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
The last time I looked at ZFS, the, to create a mirror, to create a RAID, essentially, both partitions had to be the same size. And that meant I had to work on my physical layout much more than I thought I would have to.
Yeah, so so you can do it with dissimilar size drives. The way I believe it works now is that it will actually just take the smaller of the two and use that. But there are ways to it. But the cool thing is, since it's ZFS, I mean, there are ways to get around that. So let's say you have... two or three 250 gig drives and then a 500 gig drive.
Yeah.
So when you do like a RAID 5 set, it would use all, it would just take 250 gig out of that 500 gig drives. But what you can do later, the cool thing is later you can go out and pull out those 250 gig drives one at a time and pop in 500 gig drives, and then it'll automatically start using the extra space.
Okay. A little robo-like then.
Right. So there's some things that, you have to worry about in terms of consistency. But I guess what's built into ZFS is the smarts to realize that, you know, I don't want to use well, maybe you do, Randall, but most people wouldn't want to use that whole 500 gig drive. So there's some kind of like dummy protection built in to make sure that you don't screw yourself up.
One of our chat room folks, Jazz G4, has found a ZFS storage company called Nexenta.
Yeah, I was going to mention them.
Yeah.
So they've basically taken our code and built their own products out of them. And, you know, Sun has supported them in that, which I think is really cool.
And that's really an enterprise level storage for them.
Right, right.
Very cool.
Yep. Yep, definitely.
It's they have a failover system that uses replicated ZFS pools.
Right, so we should talk about that, actually.
What is that?
So, so what you can do with ZFS is you can, there's a couple of commands, ZFS send and ZFS receive, and it allows you to do replication between boxes, right? So, yeah, so data, so, you know, data protection, if you're really worried about, protecting your data,
it'll do that over the network.
It'll do that over the network and it operates on deltas again, right? So that's a big feature. So you could do those, you know, if you had a couple of boxes and you wanted to do replication between them, I mean, you could tell ZFS to do that once every hour. You could tell it to do it once every minute. You could do it once every 5 seconds. And actually, ZFS can keep up with that, which is the new thing.
We're not accustomed to these tools being built into the file system. You know, they're always at, at a higher level.
Right.
Yeah, because I'm thinking rsync when you said that. But this is like a really, really smart rsync because it has access to what actually changed on the disk instead of having to go look for it all the time.
Exactly.
Is it sector level? Or does it care about that? Is it not that tight to hardware?
No, it's still, it's not quite that tied.
Yeah.
So because ZFS, it's really at the file system level.
It doesn't care about it. Yeah,
it doesn't really care.
Know or care.
No, it doesn't really care. I mean, the built consistency, like we mentioned before, is built in.
Right.
So ZFS can manage that at a file system level.
Right.
And that's what companies like Wikimedia are doing. That's how they're using it. They use ZFS send and receive basically as their backup mechanism.
Well, that's exactly what it would be,
right?
Especially if one of them's offsite.
Exactly.
You have something maybe you know, in Seattle, you have something here, and you say, okay, I want you guys to replicate.
Right.
Especially if it's done efficiently, to do that even over the internet would be pretty fast enough.
Right.
Could you tunnel that over SSH then?
Yeah, I believe you could.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. And also the... you know, the neat thing about it is, you say, you know, you could replicate over, over
TCP,
distances.
Yeah.
Yeah. You replicate over TCP or other connections. But again, the consistency is built in. So if you think of enterprise tools that operate at a block level, you have to worry a lot about consistency because I might send a block and I might send it out of order. And then all of a sudden I have part of a transaction on the other end and my primary box failed. And now I don't have access to that data. And because ZFS is doing the consistency checking, you don't have to worry as much about out of order writes and things like that.
Okay, so I'm just going to want to install this on all my operating systems. Yeah. Is there any way for somebody using Windows to kind of, there it really isn't.
Not Windows. Now, I don't know if we mentioned it, but Linux actually has a userland version of ZFS that's being developed. So you can actually go out, do a search on Google again on ZFS Linux, and you'll find a project out there that has implemented ZFS in userland. And it works quite well. I've used it at home before on some of my Linux servers.
Now, one of the reasons ZFS was created was to kind of blow out some of the limits, like 2 gig files and things like that. What are the limits for ZFS?
Well, it's a 128-bit file system, so it's one level above. Yeah, it's huge. I mean,
it's petabytes.
Yeah, people say unlimited. It's not unlimited, right? There are. It's actually up in the exabytes.
Zettabytes.
Yeah, it's way, 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 way up there. So, I don't want to say you'll never run out, right? I mean, you'll probably hit physical limitations before you'll run out of file address space limitations, right? So you'll run out of, all of a sudden I have,
a trillion hard files are not sufficient.
Yet. Well, I've got a trillion files, right. and you go to do an LS, right. And there's some,
you can't list them.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
So there is a limit to not only the size of files, but to the number of files. But that's also 128.
Yeah,
bit.
Yeah.
So
it's all quite significant. Yeah, and all that's documented out on the ZFS page on OpenSolaris.org. So,
It seems reasonable. Why not go to 128 mm-hmm. bit?
You know, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so, again, I mean, what Sun is really doing with this, we encourage people to take the code and use it however they want, which I think is great, mm-hmm. right? But really what Sun is doing this is they've come up with a concept of open storage, okay? So it's very much what it sounds like. I mean, really, it's open architecture. So it's open source software like ZFS, like Dtrace that I mentioned earlier, built on top of industry standard components.
Right.
So now what we're doing is instead of creating specialized components, like you've seen in the past with some of these very large storage arrays, where if you want to buy a fiber channel board, for example, you can only buy theirs and you have to pay them $20,000, right. And all this stuff. Right. So instead of doing that, we're building storage systems using Intel and AMD processors, using kind of off the shelf QLogix and Emulex HBAs, and also using SATA drives and these new SAS drives as well. So right now in the kind of our open storage product set, you're not going to find any fiber channel drives. All you find is SATA drives or SAS drives, and these SSDs, which when you combine that with ZFS, because ZFS can manage all those components, right? Efficiently, when you combine that all together, you're able to offer some similar performance, as some of the big boys do. For a lot less cost.
SAS level write performance on SATA drives?
Well, we have actually SAS drives and SATA drives. So it just depends on where you want to go with that, right?
Right. But for somebody who's using, I think of my friend Alex Lindsay, does a lot of video mm-hmm. editing. He's writing large files out on SAS drives. Despite the performance hit of ZFS, you could still use it for that.
Well, you wouldn't notice the performance hit.
You really wouldn't.
You wouldn't notice the performance hit. So what
it could keep up.
ZFS is the enabler there, which would allow him to use those SATA drives more efficiently and not have to worry about losing data if his RAID card hiccups or something like that. Right.
Right.
So ZFS would provide that protection for him.
Pretty much eliminates the need for mm-hmm. RAID.
Yeah. And the great thing about it is, as new things come down the line, new processors from Intel, for example, like maybe coming and, new controller cards or whatever like that, because of the open architecture, then we could, or somebody else could, if they took the code, slide those in, so to speak.
So it's kind of modular?
Very much modular. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So you add capabilities as modules?
Sun kind does of? Not. So Sun packages all that up and sells it, but it's not to say that somebody else couldn't do that.
Okay.
Yep.
Very interesting.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I tell you, I look forward to the day when we get this on the desktop. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of redundancy and reliability and functionality that would be really handy for the end user.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And mm-hmm. and really, I think what you'll find in cases of like SmugMug and Wikipedia, you'll find more and more that users are using it indirectly, right? So you're getting the protection that's provided by that when you go out to a lot of these web services and use their products online. And a lot of these companies will be using ZFS on the back end to provide that protection to their users, which is where you'll see it first. And then I agree. I hope it does come to the desktop at some point. Mm-hmm. Yep. Not just the Open Solaris desktop.
But not all. It won't ever come to Windows. I think pretty much we can guarantee Microsoft's not going to do that.
Well, I mean, you know, you say that, but the code
never
is
say
open.
Never.
Right, right. The
never
code's open.
Never.
They can go grab the code. I'm sure they have people looking at our code because it's out in the open. So they can go grab the code and see what they can do with it.
Yeah. And certainly it'll be on OS 10 at some point. It sounds like that's, you know, I know you can't talk about their roadmap, but it seems like that's after Enterprise, it's the next step.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And in order to have it on a OS 10 server, they've got to put the compatibility into OS 10 desktop anyway. So
yeah, it's basically, I'm sure, I mean, I don't have any insight into this, but I'm sure their code set is, you know, whatever, 90% similar, right? Yeah. With a few added features to make it server.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the added features is ZFS.
Yeah. Well, it will be.
That's a big step towards...
absolutely, it will be in Snow Leopard, right?
Yeah, very interesting.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I can't wait to... boot my live CD of Open Solaris now. I want to play with it. Ha ha. You have to download it, Randall. Ha ha.
Yet another show where Leo installs something.
Toys. Yeah, well, I came real close to booting it up, but then I thought, no, I better not because I'll get this.
I'm surprised. Didn't you get one of those, Randall, down at Scale?
I think you handed it to me.
Oh, good.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
He should have one somewhere in his bag of stuff that he got from...
Somewhere in my bag of stuff, yeah.
From Scale. It was good to see him down there.
You offer ISOs for x86 hardware, any other hardware, or is it a pretty broad variety?
I believe it's... I mean, I can tell you.
Well, people can find out themselves.
Yeah, go to the website and download it.
Yeah, just go to... Yep.
Mostly x86.
Yeah, This is x86, x64.
Mm-hmm.
And so I presume any PC I could boot this onto without any difficulty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you run it in, I imagine there are VMware appliances. You could run this.
You can boot that right up into, VMware or boot it into what I do, boot it into VirtualBox. It runs
very
well.
Sun's a virtual machine.
Sun bought them, whatever it was a year ago or so. And so you can actually, when you go into VirtualBox to set that up, there's actually, if you're familiar with VirtualBox, there's a setting, right? With Windows or is it Linux or what have you. Right. There's a setting for Open Solaris.
Now, you've got Open Solaris running natively on your 13-inch PowerBook. No?
No, it's actually running in VirtualBox.
It's running in VirtualBox.
Right.
So you have OS 10 running VirtualBox.
So I've got a triple boot, right? I've got OS 10. yeah.
No, this is cool because it's Ubuntu. You got Ubuntu and VMware.
Right.
Running Open Solaris.
So I've got Mac OS, right? I left that on there. Hardly touch it. And then I've got Ubuntu, which is what I primarily use. I also have Windows running, Windows 7 for games and stuff.
Right.
And so primarily I run this out of. I've tested this in all three because that's kind of my job is to know how this stuff works. So usually I just open up VirtualBox under Ubuntu. And
that's what
I've got running now, and it works great. I've got about 512 megs of RAM, I think, allocated to it.
That's sufficient.
It's sufficient for me. Of course, you're also a little bit tied to the underlying hardware. So I'm running this on my new 13-inch aluminum MacBook, which has pretty good hardware support or hardware features. But you know, if you're running it on maybe an older laptop or an older desktop, you may want to give it a little bit more memory, which is the key component there.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, one of our chat room guys says he's concerned about reliability. He's heard that if you incorrect setting can cause a file system to fail. Is it not robust in terms of setting it up?
It's very robust.
It sounds like you said it was.
You have to really play with it
to screw
something up. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's just like
you
any other.
You could screw it up.
You absolutely could screw it up. But, you know, you would have to have root access, first of all.
Right.
Which is a little different in Solaris. So if you're trying this out, you probably can't figure out how to get root access. I hate to say as a Linux guy.
Good. You know, Ubuntu now does not come with a root user.
Right. You have to set that up manually in order to get that. So you'd have to have root access. It's not that it can't be done. But it's just like any other file system, right?
If you've got root, you can screw anything.
I mean, if anybody goes to their command line with root and types in
RM star,
I wasn't gonna say it because I don't want people to go try it. But I mean, it's a simple command and anybody can run it and screw up their whole file system. So this same thing is true. Users can make mistakes.
We actually considered naming one of our, I think it was a Twitch show, RM-RF*, and then we thought better of it. And I'm sure you can imagine why.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nobody listening to this show would ever have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's really nice to meet you, Aaron. Thank you for bringing this in, and thank David for us. Boy, I think, Randall, this is really cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another one of these shows where I want to play with this as soon as we get done here. So.
Yeah. Yeah. This sounds like the way to go with file systems in future. We now have the hardware to support this kind of full service file. It's a full service file system.
Absolutely.
Really. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think there's no reason not to, you know, I mean, I think back to FAT16 and how primitive file systems, but we've gone way beyond that. And there's no reason that you shouldn't. Is the structure on disk similar? Do you still have a file allocation table sort of structure of some kind?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can still...
Is it node-based like Unix?
You mean inode-based?
Inode-based, yeah.
That's a David question.
Okay.
too late.
Yeah, too late for that one. But it's very similar. I mean, if you get into the command line...
It's not going to look that unfamiliar.
It's not going to look unfamiliar at all. Yeah. You do a DF, you see your file systems, yeah. You know...
By the time you're at that level, I'm sure it's all translated.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Very cool. Thank you, Aaron.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Anytime.
Aaron Newcomb from Sun Microsystems, and again, you can find out more about this if you go online. ZFS has a very thorough, just Google ZFS, and you'll see the page where all this stuff is.
Absolutely.
And
you can also go to my blog if you want to learn more about Open Storage and ZFS, which is blogs.sun.com/openstorage.
Oh, excellent.
And so that's my professional blog, so to speak. It's the one I do for Sun Microsystems. So, you know, if you want to kind of follow along what the latest developments are and see some cool videos and things like that, definitely check out that blog.
What is open storage?
Right. So that's what I was describing before about this whole concept of using open architecture and open source software to make this happen. So using industry standard components and things. It's really a concept more than a product.
It's not a particular technology.
Right,
it's the idea of using open solutions.
Right. And this is not particular to Sun, right? I mentioned before things like OpenFiler, which follow the same principle.
Sure.
Sun has really kind of developed this a little bit and is looking at this as their next generation of products.
Open source has a posse, but open storage has a Twitter feed. You can follow it at twitter.com/openstorage.
That's right. That's right.
I love it.
Follow along and see what's going on. And then, you know, for me personally, you can always follow my podcast as well. Do you mind if I put in a shameless plug?
Please do. I didn't know you had one. That's
great.
Yes,
absolutely. So I do an open source podcast. It's a video podcast. So no direct competition with anything you're doing, Leo. But you can find that.
I love it. I want more competition.
Exactly.
But anyway, you can find that at thesourceshow.org. And, you know, if you're interested in finding out, I'm going to have, as I mentioned, you know, Randall and I kind of met each other face to face, which was very nice down at Scale. And I've got some videos and some interviews coming from Scale. Those will be up online, within the next couple of weeks.
He has the longest opening for a video podcast I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is pretty long.
It's like a minute and a half. And then finally it gets around to getting the show started.
Yeah, it is. I've trimmed it down a little bit.
Did you get one of those Blender people to make this for you?
No, I did it all myself. Although,
cool.
If there's any Blender folks out there that want to help with, creating some cool transitions, please let me know. I'd love some help. So I've done it all myself. And the cool thing is I've done it all with open source software. Except I was called out by Marcel Gagne just recently because he started his own.
He's always been proud of that.
Yeah. So I had to back off a little bit. But but when I first started, like a couple of years ago, there really wasn't any other video podcast that were using only open source software.
It's a challenging thing. What do you use for video editing?
So I use Cinelera. Don't know if you've heard of it, but it's really a full featured video editor. It's gotten a bad rap in the community because it is like any video editor. It's complicated. It takes a while. The interface is unique, just like they all are.
Yeah.
So it takes a while to get used to. But once you get used to it, you can do some amazing things. You know, I step back now and I say, I cannot believe this is open source.
We got to take a look at this.
Absolutely. I'd love to give you a walkthrough sometime.
We're spending $1,200 for, a Final Cut Studio. I'd be very interested in any open source solutions.
It's free and free. Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool.
Yep.
All right, Aaron, thank you very much. We're just going to, you can split if you want, or we're going to record the show open and close now. So if you want to stick around, you're welcome to.
Great.
Okay. He's going to stick around, but let's finish the show up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, Randall, this might
that
be the first
cool.
one where you installed it before I did during the show.
Yeah. Well, actually, I had ZFS installed about 6 months ago. There's a Mac version available on the Mac.
There is.
CodeShare one.
Using Mac Fuse or...
No, it's native. It's a native driver.
Wow.
And so I've been playing with it for a little while, but not too much playing with it. That's how I knew that the mirroring thing was a little bit odd. And then I sort of stopped looking at it because I have different sized disks that I wanted to play with. So that didn't work out so well. Although what Aaron said kind of gives me a little bit more hope that I should just keep working with it. If you go to the ZFS page, there's a link to the Mac version you can download and install. It's not for the faint of heart. I mean, you are installing kind of early code that goes in the kernel. So one reboot later and something was wrong, it'd be bad. But yeah, you can actually build ZFS file system. In fact, you could even build ZFS in a temp file. You could actually build a file that's within your file system. So this is like a DMG is on a Mac, where you have a file system inside a file system.
Right.
And I was actually experimenting with it that way and playing with different things to go on there. At some point, when I get like more round to it, so I want to actually take my, like I've got three or four spare 300 gig and 200 gig drives that I've bought over the years for doing backups. Now that I've got my Drobo, I don't need them anymore. They're just sitting there idle doing nothing. I want to put ZFS across all of them and make a giant storage pool and make that available via a home machine or something and tie it into my network. So it'll be pretty cool.
If you find, if you do get around to it, would you let me know? Because all I've been able to find is square to it. And I've been looking for a round to it for a long time.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I tell you, sometimes it's a little tricky that way.
You know, I have to say, these guys have got my mouth watering for ZFS. It's like, I don't want to use these old file systems anymore. It seems like this is the future.
The day OS 10 boots ZFS, I will be dancing a little dance in the street for sure.
I remember when that rumor first leaked that maybe Leopard was going to use ZFS, and I remember how excited people in the geek community were. And that's really probably the first time I became aware of it. And now that it's actually coming true, I think this is very exciting. I hope that in Snow Leopard they make it an option. You know?
Well, and if not, I mean, if you can go to this Mac website and still download it, I mean, this is the real code. Well, as far as I can tell, it looks like it's the real code that Apple's going to be using. Like they're using the Mac Forge to sort of host their thing.
Right.
So that's like I said, another place there.
That's exciting.
So shall we talk about what's coming up?
Please do.
Okay.
I think Cinelera ought to be coming up. I'm excited. I'm going to find out more about that.
That is on my list, but probably the most important, and since Aaron brought this up, I was at Scale last weekend, and
yes.
I met a bunch of our past guests, which was really interesting, so finally putting faces to names and stuff like that, but also some of our future guests, and the one I'm most excited about is John O'Bacon, who is the community coordinator for Ubuntu.
Great.
And so he's going to talk a lot about Ubuntu and also about building communities and about open source in general. So this will be one of those topical shows where we're actually covering a lot more about community building and things like that rather than specifics of a project. Although I'm sure we'll get into Ubuntu a little bit on that show. But he's coming up in April. We also have coming up, we have Tux Paint. That'll be next week's show.
That's exciting. We talked about that on Jumping Monkeys. And it's just a great free painting program that's open source.
And coming up after that, both while I'm still on the cruise ship, actually, but I'll get to in a minute, is Boink, the software that allows multiple people to share the CPU load for a large project. So that'll be coming up soon. Also, Arduino, which, as you suggested last week, I've invited Andy and Akko to talk about.
Oh, good.
Hasn't responded to me yet, but I haven't given enough time to really respond yet. We've also got Ebox, which is about allocating hardware systems using allocation technology. We've got Wubby coming up, which I'm also looking forward to, and a bunch more on the short list, but we'll just leave that as teasers for the future.
Tillotson says in our chat room, "Woot, Jono's a legend."
Indeed. Oh, people were flocking around him. He's another rock star, so I'm glad he volunteered to be on the show.
Well, you got to warn me ahead of time when we have rock stars on. I was so humiliated when we had a jQuery on and John. I didn't know John was a rock star. Little did I know. I'm talking to John Lennon here, and I ought to know, right?
And speaking of cruises, as most people are listening to the show, I'm actually on a cruise. I'm leaving tomorrow as we're taping this. I don't know if that's too confusing, but I'm leaving tomorrow to go on Evolution Emanation, which is the third Scientific American cruise. And speaking of that, I have in the podcast.insightcruises.com podcast feed, I'm doing another show that Ira Flatow did on the previous cruise, and it's called The Catalysts of Creativity.
Ooh.
So it's a really good show. It's about how patents happen and how people think of things and some really remarkable people that you wouldn't have thought had been inventors, like the patent that Michael Jackson has on, well, I'll leave it for you to go to the podcast to find out.
Not Michael Jackson, the singer.
Michael Jackson, the singer, has
a patent.
So go to podcast.insightcruises.com and go listen to that show. It's a three-parter. I think the second part goes out this upcoming weekend. The first part already went out last weekend. So, check it out.
Very cool. Randall Schwartz, always a pleasure. You bring us the greatest guests. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wasn't sold on what's going on in the open source community these days, I think by now, listening to a few episodes of Floss Weekly, they've got to be as excited as I am. This is really where software is moving, and it's very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Randall. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly. Have a great cruise, dude.